by constantly hearing and attending Srimad Bhagavatam lectures, all that which is troublesome to the heart is completely destroyed, and loving devotional service is established as an irrevocable fact. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 6, Text 2. In the matter of the activities of Lord Rishabhadev. Rishi Ovacha Satyam Muktam King Tuhiha Varekena Manasoda Vishambram Anavas Thanasya Sata Kirata Ivasanga Chante. Rishi Uvacha Satya Muktam Uktam Kinto Hiha Vaike Namana Soda Vishrambam Anavas Thanasya Sata Kirata Iva Sangachante Rishi Ovacha Satya Muktam Kintu Iha Vaike Namana Soda Vishambram Anavathanasya Sata Kirata Iva Sangachante. It's a prose, yes. I figured it out. It's kind of weird. So I was trying to see if I could fix the meterage inside, but what to do? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Yeah. Translation. Srila Sukadev Goswami replied, "My dear King, you have spoken correctly. However, after capturing animals, a cunning hunter does not put faith in them, for they might run away. Similarly, those who are advanced in spiritual life do not put faith in the mind. Indeed, they always remain vigilant and watch the mind's actions." Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Isaya Bhakti Sam Prabhupada Ki. In Bhagavad Gita 18.5, Lord Krishna says, "Yajna dana tapa karma na tyajam karayam meva tat yajno danam tapascheva pavanani manishtinam. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up, but should be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls. Anyone who has renounced the world and has taken sannyas should not renounce chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Renunciation does not mean that one has to renounce Sankirtan Yagya. Excuse me. Similarly, one should not renounce charity or tapasya. The yoga system for control of the mind and senses must be strictly followed. Lord Rishabhadev showed how severe types of tapasya could be performed, and he set an example for all others." Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyan Gyana Shalakaya Taksha Miltanilam Tasmai Sigurave Namaham Shri Chintami Manu Vishtam Sapitam Yana Bhutali Swayam Pam Kadama Yam Dirati Sampadam Tikam. Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Banjagarpati Gopisha Gopika Kanto Rara Kanto Namaste Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radha Vindavaneshwari Vishabhanusate Devi Panamami Hari Priye. Panchakarpatarubhyasya kripasimibhavacharpatitam pavanibhyo vashalibhinamonamaha mukham karoti vajanam pangalangayate girimikmadhamadisagurinatharana pramanamadava. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siyarita Gada Sivasati Gaur Bhakta Vinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. You are welcome to this morning's Srimad Bhagavatam discussion. Reading from 5th canto in the matter of the activities of Lord Rishabhadev. Translation. Srila Sukadeva Goswami replied, "My dear king, you have spoken correctly. However, after capturing animals, a cunning hunter does not put faith in them, for they might run away. Similarly, those who advance in spiritual life do not put faith in the mind. Indeed, they always remain vigilant and watch the mind's action." Okay. So here, Sukadeva Goswami is replying to King Parikshit. And the question before was, he said, "My dear Lord, for those who are completely pure in heart, knowledge is attained by the practice of yoga, and the attachment for fruitive activity is completely burned to ashes. For such people, the power of mystic yoga automatically arises. They do not cause distress. Why then did Rishabhadev neglect them?" And so this is the answer Sukadeva Goswami is giving. Here, Sukadeva Goswami is comparing the mind to an animal that has been captured by a hunter, say probably half killed. If you remember the story of the hunter that was delivered by Narada, who took pleasure in killing animals halfway and leaving them to suffer. But the trick, or will I say, in this case, it is said that if this animal, which is the mind, is not totally killed means totally subdued, there is every chance that it will come back to life and it will run away. And Lord Krishna confirms this in Bhagavad Gita. Arjun says in Bhagavad Gita, the Chanchala Himanasa Krishna, that the mind is very, very flickering. In a sense, very difficult. That he prefers to control the wind than to control the mind. Say, so how can I do this? And then Krishna replies, and he has a Bhagavad Gita here. Wala Lepa. One second, please. Krishna says, it says, Asamsaya Mahabaho Mano Du Ni Graham Chalam Abhyasena Tukunteya Varegena Chagriyate. Sri Bhagwan Overture, definitely. So the Krishna says, "O mighty Amson of Kunti, it is undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind. So Krishna admits that yes, it's difficult. And just like Sukadeva Goswami is comparing the mind to an animal that is killed half dead. Now you would think that an animal that is half dead, that the chances of it surviving is less. You know, it might run away, but there's a higher chance that it would die somewhere. But here, the mind is so either rascally and at the same time powerful that not only does it run away when it's half subdued, but there's every chance that it will come back to life again and even worse. Because now it knows what you're capable of doing. It knows there's a high chance that it could be subdued. So it comes back with twice the vigor. So Krishna admits, he says yes, that the mind is undoubtedly very difficult to curb to contain or to control. He said, but it is possible by suitable practice and by detachment. Now, the verse before this, Maharaj Parikshit says that for those who are completely pure in heart, knowledge is attained by the practice of bhakti yoga. For those who are completely pure in heart, knowledge is attained by practice of bhakti yoga, and attachment for fruitive activity is completely burned to ashes. So look at two things, they're very interesting things. Practice of bhakti yoga and attachment to material things are burned to ashes. And here Krishna makes it clear, he says that by suitable practice of what? Bhakti yoga. And by detachment. So either by detachment from or attachment to is destroyed. It's the same thing. Either you detach or you reduce the attachment. It's the same thing. So it says, it is possible by suitable practice of bhakti yoga, definitely, and by detachment from fruitive activity. Now we recite, and ask the prayers of your Bhadra, so Nityam Bhagavatam Seva, yeah. Bhagavati Tamas, okay, Bhakti Bhavati, nice sticky, irrevocable, fixed, unchangeable. So, one of the process of bhakti yoga, or one of the practice of bhakti yoga, which will help us curtail the mind, is what we are doing now, shravanam. And not just any shravanam, Bhagavat shravanam. So by constantly hearing Bhagavatam, by daily attending Bhagavatam class, all which is troublesome to the mind, to the heart. And here it says again, it says the mind here is compared to an animal which is half killed and is about to, and it could run away if it's not controlled. So all that which is giving the impetus to the mind to run away, all that which troubles the mind, is completely destroyed. At least almost completely destroyed. By hearing. So by Shravanam, which is practicing bhakti yoga, one is able to curtail the restlessness of the mind. But not only does the mind get subdued or curtailed or calm, something else happens simultaneously. So it's not that you're trying, it's like the hunter who is also shooting the animal, but now you're not just trying to weaken the animal, you're killing it simultaneously also. It's like shooting the animal with an arrow that has poison. It gets hurt, then it dies. Totally, finish. So not only does the heart or the mind become calm from its restless nature by hearing Bhagavatam, it's an odd which is troublesome to the heart, is almost completely destroyed. And loving devotional service to the Lord is established as an irrevocable fact. And as it says, those who are completely pure in heart, knowledge is attained by the practice of bhakti yoga. So, loving devotional service unto the Lord, which is bhakti yoga, when it is established in the heart as an irrevocable fact, and that's what this verse is saying here. Irrevocable means something which doesn't change, or something which is fixed. That's the word, nice sticky. So Sukadeva Goswami says, similarly, those who are advanced in spiritual life do not put faith in the mind. They remain always vigilant and watch the mind's action. Now, vigilance here means Not allowing the mind to wander. That's one. The physical aspect of wandering of the mind. And two, always making sure that that which remains fixed in the mind is Krishna's service, bhakti. So one thing is to watch the wandering of the mind, but one thing is to make sure that the mind is totally subdued by the practice of bhakti. So this is the first thing that Sukadeva Goswami is trying to explain, that the restless nature of the mind is something that is constant. And Krishna says that it's very constant. Arjuna says, Chanchalaya Manasa, Krishna says, the mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong. He doesn't just say strong, he says very strong. So something that is restless doesn't stay in one place. Turbulent, wild, obstinate, it doesn't listen. It does what it likes. Then worse, if something that is restless, troublesome, and does what it likes is weak, you can always control it. But now it has all these attributes, but at the same time, it's very strong. That's why 1 minute it is here, the next minute it is there. And there is nothing you can do. It's like a horse let loose. It does what it likes, jumps where it likes. But then you need an expert horseman to be able to control a horse that is let loose. So in the same way, the process of controlling the mind, which is always loose, always restless, always obstinate, is by practice of what? Bhakti yoga. And the process is very simple. 9 processes of bhakti yoga, of which Bhagavatam Seva or Shravana of Bhagavatam helps to establish bhakti in the heart and by detachment. Now this is the interesting one. By detachment here and in Bhagavatam here, Sukadeva Goswami says, attachment for fruitive activity is completely burned to ashes. So one cannot on one hand try to control the mind by Shravanam, Bhagavat Shravanam, or by the 9 processes of bhakti, but on the other hand, you are feeding the mind the things that makes it restless. It's counterproductive. You cannot on one hand be spraying fire with extinguisher, and on the other hand, you're pouring foil on it. It's like, which one are you trying to do? Do you want to put it out or you want to put it on? If you're pouring foil on the mind by engaging activities which attach you to fruitive activities, it's like feeding the mind with foil. Now, by practicing bhakti yoga, which is by suitable practice, is also a means of calming the mind. So you cannot be calming the mind and at the same time being attached to material activities. It's counterproductive. There's no result. It's like taking one step forward, one step back. So at the end of the day, you're not moving. You're in the same place. One step forward, one step back. One step forward, one step back. So, in order for the devotee or the sadhaka to have visible or tangible results, both have to go simultaneously. And Srila Prabhupada says here in the purport, he says, the yoga system for control of the mind and senses must be strictly followed. The yoga system for control of the mind and senses must be strictly followed. So, if detachment is going on, but there is no practice of bhakti yoga, then there's really no result. Or there's some result, but not much. And at the same time, if practice of bhakti yoga is going on, but detachment of fruitive activity is not going on, it's the same thing. So it's half-half. So both have to go simultaneously. Now, it says, but even those who are in the renounced order, the sannyas, they should not renounce chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So this is important. Now, we're saying give up fruitive activities. Renounce things that are material. Detach yourself from things that cause attachment to material activities. That is one of the process of calming the restless mind. But after giving up everything, no matter what you give up, you must not renounce or give up the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Irrespective of what your varna or ashram is, according to Prabhupada here. Because The chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is actually also one of the process or one of the practice which is suitable for calming the mind. And it's one of the greatest austerity. Krishna says in, I think it's chapter 10, if I'm not mistaken, let's quickly see. Was talking about austerity. Yeah. Mahasinam brigu aham, giram asmi ekam asharam, yajnam japo yajnosmi, stava ranam himalayam. Say, of great sages, I'm brigu, of vibrations, I'm the transcendental om, of sacrifices, I am the chanting of the holy name japa. So, now, it is very significant that Prabhupada says that even the sannyasi who has renounced everything should not renounce the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Because when one takes sannyas, it is said that certain ritualistic activities should be renounced. So, and interestingly, the highest sacrifice one could perform is japa. So it, here Prabhupada simultaneously saying that even though the sannyas has given up all other kind of sacrifices, this sacrifice, which is none different from Krishna himself, it says, of sacrifices, I am the chanting of the holy name, japa. This should not be given up. Because by giving up this supreme sacrifice, then you don't have the requisite or the required practice, which is suitable. Yeah, she should go on the Kijai. She punch that for Kijai. Then you don't have the suitable spiritual practice which is required to subdue the restless mind. So, inevitably we can see here, I mean, the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is something that we cannot stress enough. So usually sometimes I have a question I ask most devotees. I say, why do you chant the Hare Krishna mantra? And there's so many reasons. Oh, it's the yoga dharma. Oh, we have been asked to chant 16 rounds every day. Oh, because in this age of Kali, there is no other way, there is no other way. Oh, because Krishna says, of all sacrifices, I am japa. So there's so many reasons people chant. And these reasons, they vary from time, place, and the spiritual adhikar of the chanter or the devotee in place, in question. When we join newly, people chant because you've been told to chant. And at some point you're chanting because you've promised that you will chant 16 rounds. Then at some point you're chanting because you know it's the means to deliver you from this world. And some people are chanting because it's a way to meditate. And some people are chanting because it's a way to break out from stress. And some people are chanting because they actually want to connect with the Maha Mantra. And some people are chanting because they want to become pure in heart. And the reason goes on and on and on until ultimately we see that we are chanting for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. And not just chanting for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, because we're saying, O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. Which service? You understand? So ultimately, we get to that platform where, now, interestingly again, O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. And Krishna clearly states here that by suitable practice and detachment, one is able to curb the restless mind. Now, every day we chant, O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. Now this japa, which we chant every day, Prabhupada said here in the Prabhupada that it must not be given up. Because it's the ultimate sacrifice. And this ultimate sacrifice is a suitable practice. Suitable practice for what? For curbing the restless mind. And what is this practice itself? This practice is saying, O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. By engaging in the service of the Lord, what happens? What happens? By engaging in the service of the Lord, one second. In this way, you'll be freed from bondage to work, and its auspicious and inauspicious result. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you'll be liberated and come to me. 9:28. Shubha shubha falam meva, moksha yase kama bandhanai, sannyasa yoga yuktatma, vimukto mamupasyasi. So, here Prabhupada is saying that the sannyasa who has given up everything should not give up the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Why? Because this is the greatest sacrifice. Why? Because Krishna says, of all sacrifices, japo, yajrasmi, I'm japa. Now, why is he this? Because the holy name of the Lord is none different from Krishna. Because japa is chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Krishna is not different from his name. So because he is not different from his name, and chanting of his name is the ultimate sacrifice, which helps to curb the restless mind, which is one of the practices for curbing the restless mind, he says that by doing this, not only will the mind be curbed, but by engaging in this practice, it says you will be freed from bondage to work and the auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on Krishna in this principle of renunciation, this is the ultimate renunciation, you will be liberated and come to him. So ultimately, whether you are chanting because it's the way to get back home, back to Godhead, whether you are chanting for whatever, ultimately, everything is inside. So you'll be liberated, you'll come to me. So interestingly enough, the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, not only does it purify the heart, which is our focus here today, and when the heart is purified, when the heart is pure, Maharaj Parikshit said the verse before, he says, those who are completely pure in heart, they attain knowledge by bhakti yoga. So when the heart is pure and it's totally cleansed, then ultimately one knows that the ultimate knowledge one can get is through bhakti yoga. Now, by engaging in bhakti yoga, one develops detachment from fruitive activities. When one is detached from fruitive activities, one reduces the attachment of the mind to these activities and reduces his restlessness also. Now, when the mind is calm and it's not restless, then loving service of the Lord can be established in it as an irrevocable fact, as an unchanging fact. But until that happens, it is on and off. On and off. You put something today, it's off tomorrow. You put it the day after, it's off the next day. And it just keeps going like that, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then you're wondering, what is happening? Because you don't have the suitable practice and enough detachment. Now, when we speak of detachment, most times the first thing that hits everybody's mind is, oh, should I take sannyas? But in everywhere you're situated, you can have perfect detachment. If you are engaging in suitable practice. So, and Bhagavad Gita clearly mentions that detachment is not just giving up the object of the senses. If you give up the object of the senses and your mind is still dwelling on them, Bhagavad Gita says you're what? A pretender. So you can physically give up these things, but again, the mind is there. If the mind is still dwelling on the object of the senses, even though you've physically given them up, then you're a pretender. But ultimately, we want to have both going on simultaneously. We want to be able to detach from them, but have enough suitable practice to keep the mind under good control. See, that, so that way we're genuine, we're not pretending. So, if we can physically detach by suitable practice, back to yoga, then the mind can be curtailed, or calmed down, or controlled. And then, practicing back to yoga, which in this case, a particular process, which is the ultimate sacrifice, which is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, becomes an added advantage. And that's why the 10th offense is very clear. It says, to maintain material attachment, even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. I mean, why should that be an offense? To maintain material attachment, even after understanding so many instructions, meaning so many glories of the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. So that's the problem. Because you cannot be chanting on one hand, which is suitable practice, but you still have material attachment. And Krishna says that to curtail the mind, you have to have practice and detachment. So if you're chanting and you're still maintaining material attachment, it is counterproductive. So it's an offense to the holy name because you're creating a disturbance. Like I said, you're putting out the fire with extinguisher in one hand, but then you're pouring petrol on the other hand. So it's like, what do you want actually? You do, it tries to go off, then you pour foil again. You go, it tries to go off, you pour foil again. It's like, what do you want? Choose one. You understand? If you want material attachment, go for it. Stop chanting. And if you want chanting, you know, then detach from this gradually. Now the detachment here from the object of the senses, which, like I said, is the 10th offense, is not a mechanical thing. It's not something you just wake up and say, okay, today, bam, finish, done. It's a gradual process. And that's a process. It's said, it says, by suitable practice. Practice means something you do regularly. You want to become something, you have to practice. You know, Krishna did not say by suitable, maybe, how do you say, by suitable, there was no precision. It's something you practice. It's something you constantly do. But ultimately, there should be a goal. You understand? So it's not something you do mechanically, that you just wake up today and say, okay, now, boom, I cut everything, I'm done. And now, what's the best way to have detachment? The verse before that explains, 9:26, if I'm not mistaken, 9:27. Yet karosi yad asnasi yad josi dadasiyat yat apasya sekunte yat karosa marap maram. So whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever austerity you perform, do as an offering to me, O son of Kunti. That's the best way to get detached. So it's not a mechanical process. Constantly, gradually, offering everything we do to Krishna, we gradually remove ourselves from the center of attraction and gradually pull Krishna to the center of attraction. When we gradually pull ourselves from the center of attraction and put Krishna as the center of attraction, we become detached from it. Because we are attached to something to the degree that it makes us the center of attraction. When we are not the center of attraction of something, we are not attached to it. What do I care? You understand? So the idea is to put Krishna at the center of attraction and take ourselves out of it. So we are attached to Krishna, not to ourselves. Or not to the results that this will give to us, but to the result that it will give to Krishna. So in that way we have simultaneous detachment, and because whatever we're doing, we're offering to Krishna, we have suitable practice. Hare Krishna. We are a little bit out of time, but if there's any comment, contribution, adjustment, corrections.
Why is Shukadeva Swami using for controlling the mind this example of Pandava? and animals. I mean, it seems that these elevated souls are inclined to use such vivid examples of sinful activities in explaining bhakti activities like Vishnava Chakravarti Thakur, especially like unfaithful wives and things like that. Why is that so? I mean, I like it.
Your question is, you want to know why Sukadeva Goswami chose to use dead animals.
As if teasing, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has similar practice.
It's simple.
A picture as example which immediately attracts Kali Yuga.
Well, you just answered it yourself. That's the first answer. That's the first answer. Better to use an example that you can relate to.
Yeah.
In Kali Yuga, you have hunters, so we can relate to that. In Kali Yuga, people are unfaithful. You can relate to that. It's simple. You know, better to use an example. Like if I'm giving an example here, if I want to explain something and I want to give an example, and I start giving an example in, say, quantum physics, or say in engineering, or in medicine, not many people will grab that. Because I don't know. I don't know how many quantum physicists are here. Maybe Ananta Prabhu will be able to grab it. But not many people will be able to grab it. If I start using an example in medicine, that, you know, by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra is like the process of surgically removing a blocked artery in your heart. People are like, what is he talking? What is the artery? What is, you know, he's like, what is he saying? But if I say, by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, it's like removing paneer from your sauce by the side to eat it. You can relate to that example. I mean, this is just an example. So it's better to use something that the mind can relate to. Unfaithful wife or husband or whatever is something that happens every time. Anyone can relate to that. Now, if you extrapolate that, in the case of Vishnu Chakravarti, ultimately we're unfaithful to Krishna. I like Vishnu Chakravarti a lot, so when he uses example, it catches my attention. We are ultimately unfaithful to Krishna. Krishna is our ultimate lover. We belong to Krishna, ultimately. So we pursuing other things, we're actually being unfaithful to him. So that is another deeper meaning, but on the outside is an example that you and I can easily understand. And hunting with animals, it's clear. So that's one way, which you already answered. The second way, like Prabhupada says, say some of these things, when you go back, you see Vishnu Chakravarti, you ask him, why did you use this example, you know? Can you tell me personally? So, but simple put, without any ambiguity, is that these are allegories. It's just like the allegory of King Puranjana. There's a city of 9 gates, there's the wife. It's something you can relate to. You know, the senses are the this and that, and it's attacked by Jara. These are things you can relate to. So, even Prabhupada has a collection of a book called Prabhupada's Allegories. They distributed him in Bhakti Sakshi. And Prabhupada uses allegory to illustrate things or to pass messages across. And most of these allegories are things you can relate to. You know, the dark spots on the moon do not reduce the brightness of the moon at night. So that allegory can be transferred to that the good qualities of a devotee are not diminished by seemingly dark spots on him. And so many extrapolations. So when the acharyas give allegories to explain points and facts, they make it as lucid and as relatable as possible. Does it make sense? Okay.
We are blaming maybe as Krishna claims in the fifth chapter that he's not responsible for our choices and for our reactions. So maybe we can say that mind is completely under the control of our desire, because we are completely responsible for its activities. Then why is it? Then it is so difficult and it seems independent. Why is it? And so it seems a bit paradoxical.
Why is the mind independent if we're not responsible?
If we are responsible for its activities, why it seems independent and obstinate and so on? I mean, it is like this, but like I say, we are responsible for the mind, like for everything else in this material world, which we do. I mean, Krishna claims the both things, that mind is independent and that we are responsible for everything, for all of our choices. So why is it so difficult to cope with the mind? It is only the reflection of our desire.
I mean, there. Before I start giving you Shastric answers and everything, the answer again is in your question. To the degree that you make it your friend, it is controllable. Krishna clearly says the mind could be your best friend or your worst enemy. To the degree that you make it your friend, it is controllable. To the degree that you make it your enemy, it's uncontrollable. So that's simple. And how do you make your mind your friend? By engaging it in activities that are favorable to you. How do you make it your enemy? By engaging it in activities that are unfavorable to you. So there's the allegory also of the good dog and the bad dog. Whatever you feed, whichever one you feed, becomes stronger. So that's the way the mind is. If you feed your mind constantly with activities, like Krishna says also that by practice, suitable practice. You underline that word, suitable practice. So practice will always be there, but what kind of practice? Now, if you are feeding the mind with suitable practice, which is favorable to you, then it's a good friend, then you can control it. But when you feed the mind with unsuitable or unfavorable practice, then it becomes a problem. That's one side. And at the end of the day, we have prescribed duties, we have capricious activities. Now, capricious activities are things you do whimsically. You just act, you know. You don't care. It's capricious. Now, you cannot act capriciously and think there will be no repercussion. In the same way, if the mind is allowed to do what it likes, how it likes, when it likes, then definitely there's a reaction, there's a repercussion. And that is why, to that same degree, like you say, then it looks like it is difficult to control. Because you have fed it in that direction. It's like you have a dog. And some people train their dog to be very wicked. They have people who specialize in this. They put the dog through lots of physical tests that you touch their gates, the dog is jumping everywhere. Boo, 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 boo. And some people have dogs, you come, they start licking your leg. They're very friendly. But it depends on how the owner of the dog wants his dog to be. A security dog cannot be licking legs of people when they come to the house. It's counterproductive. That's not what it is trained for. In the same way, someone who has a family dog who has kids cannot have the dog that is used for banks in his house or military dogs. It's counterproductive. You understand? So in the same way, whatever you want to achieve determines to which degree you push the mind. That's why in one sense it looks like it is under you, but then why does it act against you is the way you feed it. You know, if you feed it suitably, then it will act favorably. If you feed it unsuitably, it will act unfavorably. It's as simple as that. So it depends on you, invariably. It's just the same way, same example. If you have a dog that you've trained to be really wild, there's a tendency that it might attack you someday, and so many people get attacked by their own dogs because it's been trained like that. And you have dogs that are really, really loving, really, really cool, because they've been trained like that. So ultimately, you have the decision to train the mind how you want it to act. And when it is trained really suitably, the result is perfect. Constant 24 absorption in Krishna, then it's favorable. When it is trained unsuitably, it's the opposite. It becomes a pain in the neck. Krishna says it could be your best friend or your worst enemy. It's your choice. Dantara Srimar Bhagavatam Ki Nitai Gora Premanande.